Part of the Boundless Audio Podcast Network.
Hello, all you herstory heroines, heroes, gods, goddesses, and everyone else in between. Are you ready to drink some nectar of the gods and listen to stories about women that you haven't heard of but definitely should have? Well, I hope so.
Fuck yeah!
Because this here's Whining About Herstory, where we do talk about women that you haven't heard of but definitely should have. Why are you wagging a cat butt at me?
Because he's also ready to drink the nectar of the gods.
Okay. I'm Kelly.
I'm Emily, and that was my cat's butt. Hold on. Here's my cat's butt. Isn't it cute? Here's my cat. Isn't he pissed?
Yeah, he does look pissed. He's like, why are you wagging my butt at people?
But he loves the attention. He's very much like he's kind of a, I don't know if they call it sundry or sundary, but like it's not like I want you to notice me, baka. And he's like, he wants the attention, but he's not going to admit he wants the attention.
Right.
As he fucking necks like against my computer. Okay. Well, I'm Emily and that was my cat's butt. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Whining About Herstory.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one, maybe. Hopefully less depressing than last time. We'll see.
Let me just double check. My story is definitely less depressing.
Mine definitely is.
Yeah. I definitely was not going to pair a famous corpse with another depressing story. That would just be tasteless.
Are you sure?
Remedios would not appreciate that because she was all about glam and taste,
exactly,
and sophistication. And she'd be like, that's tacky as hell. Get it out of here.
Stop it. Stop being so goddamn tacky.
Yeah. So, Kelly, what are you drinking tonight?
I'm still drinking Care. I'm about a glass and a half in from last week. Care white wine.
Kelly is soloing that bottle like a fucking hero.
Hell yeah, yeah. But not really, because I'm not going to finish it like we normally do, because it's just me.
Well, I know Drew will appreciate that.
Yeah. Drew once in a while, he's like, why is there no wine? I'm like, because we finish it, Drew.
Drew is our podcast finisher. He finishes all of the bottles of wine that we do not finish.
Unless
and
I forget
to cork them.
And he
actually gets really crabby when we do.
Yeah. Although he's been going through our... he's been making Moscow mules lately because we had a pack of ginger beer and he's like, someone needs to drink it, and we're like, yeah, you. But
years ago we had like a cocktail party, and by cocktail party I mean we all
found shots.
A like stupid mixed drink or shot online, bought the ingredients, which are all entirely too expensive for one drink,
yep,
and then like made them all for each other and shared and got super fucking wasted.
We
need to have another one of those, because Drew has only gotten better at making drinks.
Drew makes so many cocktails. The other day he was like, do you have a soda stream? And I'm like, why? And he's like, because I need to carbonate a cocktail. And I'm like, what are you making?
God bless Drew. I love that bearded son of a bitch, right? So much.
So what are you drinking?
I'm drinking a Truly watermelon. Ooh. Because I contemplated having another cut water, and then I realized that was probably no responsible.
I mean, you're in your own home. Like,
I'm in my own home, but also I don't want to be fucked up tomorrow. My dad's coming over to help me install a closet door.
Oh, and that's nice of your dad. But he's probably coming crack of dawn, because that's what dads do.
Yeah, I mean, lucky for me, he's always late. So
that's nice.
But I'm still trying to impress my parents and show them I'm not that idiot kid anymore. And him showing
up
when
I'm a long time ago
fucking hungover is probably not a great idea. Well, I'm the only kid.
Yeah.
There's no one to compare me to. It's all or nothing with me.
It's true.
I succeed or I fail. It's all down to me. I'm already not passing on the gene line. Like, I need to at least not be hungover when my dad comes to do a construction project.
Okay. I guess you can be smart and classy.
Your lady from last week would be so proud.
She would.
Remedios. She'd be, she's like, that's a classy fucking bitch.
She's like, where's your hot, or where's your red lipstick? But other than that, you're a classy fucking bitch.
She would not like my nails. My nails are wretched.
Oh my God. Let's not talk about our nails. Let's talk about whatever woman you're talking about.
Well, really quick, cheers. Because I love you. Cheers to love.
Cheers to love.
Cheers to love and bitches. Yeah.
Did you say love and bitches or loving bitches?
Loving bitches. Love both. Bitches and loving bitches.
All right, Emily. Now, who are you whining about?
Okay, so today I am whining. Oh,
rhyming.
God.
I'm whining about.
You know what? I'm just going to lean into it. I'm not going to correct. I'm just going to power through. Yep. Today I am whining about Rachel Wall.
Okay.
The best pirate of them all.
I don't know. I guess mine wasn't a pirate last week. She was a captain.
I will say, like, objectively, I think we've covered better pirates. But I needed someone fun after covering an anonymous corpse.
Oh yeah, no, mine is kind of a silly fun one as well. So yeah.
Oh, thank you, God.
We're gonna talk about World War II again for the third week in a row. No, I'm kidding.
I could not. I'd be like, all right, Kelly, you have fun. Done. I'm gonna go in the other room.
You can talk to my cat's butt.
Yeah, you can talk to my cat's booty. He's so cute. Or Max, who's still curled up in my lap because he's a little lover. All right. So, Massachusetts. Bless you. God bless you.
God bless
is well known for hanging women, a la the Salem witch trials.
Wow, you say it's a nice, light, fun one. You start with that.
I promise it's like a tongue-in-cheek dark comedy.
I don't know if I believe you.
Well, you get to judge. You are the jury, the judge, and the executioner. Speaking of executioner, but the witches of Salem were not the first women, and they would not be the last to be hanged in Massachusetts. God bless you. But to their credit, the last woman hanged in Massachusetts, God bless you, was at least guilty of something.
Yeah, like it wasn't just made up bullshit.
It might have been made up bullshit.
We've talked about witch trials in the past, because
yeah, she may have been hanged for made up bullshit. It depends on who you believe, but she definitely was not like a totally innocent bystander. Okay. Yeah. Anyway, Rachel Wall was born Rachel Schmidt in Carlisle of the Pennsylvania colony sometime in 1760.
Oh, I see. She's a Pennsylvania Carlisle.
Of the Pennsylvania Carlisle.
Like that is the name that just lends it to that.
It
like
does.
That is a very like Massachusetts, Pennsylvania style name. Oh, she's a
Rachel
Carlisle.
Wall Carlisle. Of the Pennsylvania Carlisles. Mm-hmm. By All Saints Lorange. Like it is a beautiful name. It's a name that doesn't reflect the way she was brought up or the family she was born into, though.
Oh, good. Good.
So she was born into a farming family of devout Presbyterians, which my dad is a Presbyterian, and I remember getting it confused with pedestrian.
I mean, they
I was
are
like,
also
well, Dad.
Pedestrian.
What are the theological differences between the Presbyterians and the pedestrians?
That's super funny.
Like, where do they differ? Again, this is why I need to work so hard to make my parents proud.
Yep. Now I understand. No, I'm kidding.
Kelly's like, say no more. You are a constant source of disappointment.
Oh no. I would never say that about you.
You would never say it, but you know it to be true. So Rachel grew up dreaming of something more than this provincial life. And whenever she could, Rachel would steal away from her farm work to stare out at the nearby waterfront. And like so much of this story has
Disney
vibes. Princess. Yes, 100%. That's not the way it ends. Like this is too intense for Disney. But Disney could totally give it the treatment. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, like, they gave Pocahontas the treatment and that ended horribly. Oh
my fucking God. You know what I hate? That movie is still so good. I know it's bad. I know it's bad. So good. I know ethically it's not great, but it's such a good film. Like, remember when we were screaming Colors of the Wind?
Yes, I do, and it was great.
Oh my God. I still remember. I remember listening to the cassette tape on repeat.
Aw. We're so old. God. I said we're so old, just so you know. I didn't say you're so old. I said we're so old.
We are products of our environment, and the Pocahontas soundtrack slaps, as problematic as it might be. Yes. Anyway!
Tell me about Rachel.
So at 16 years old, Rachel left home to pursue her dreams, moving to the waterfront.
Didn't she already live on the waterfront? Because you said she would stand by the waterfront.
So she lived on a farm, but she would like go to the nearby waterfront. Okay. And now she's leaving home and she's like, I'm moving to the waterfront. She's very Moana where she's like, the ocean is calling me. But one day while singing her solo Disney princess song on the waterfront, Rachel was attacked by a group of girls. Lucky for her, she was rescued by a dashing fisherman named George Wall, and the two would marry.
I mean, that seems quick. Now she's getting, again, this has, she's getting a little Anna flavors of like falling in love with the first man she meets.
Yeah, and spoiler, George Wall is not great.
So he's kind of Hans-ish.
He's not awful, but he's not great. He's not making great choices. But neither is our girl Rachel. So, ready to start their lives together, Rachel and George moved to Boston, where she took a job as a domestic servant.
Sounds about right.
For a wealthy family in Beacon Hill, which is like a really ritzy neighborhood of Boston. Not that all of Boston isn't absurdly fucking expensive. It's like, this is expensive for Boston. That's how expensive it is.
Yeah, that's bad.
And George went to work aboard a fishing schooner. So Rachel seemed, by all accounts, happy with this life, but everything changed when George came back, when the Fire Nation attacked. In 1781, George returned from sea with five sailor friends, their girlfriends, and a wild new career proposition.
Oh my gosh.
Piracy. He's basically, this is him coming back from a reliable job, meeting a bunch of tech bros and being like, I'm going to start a .com.
We're going to go into Bitcoin, honey.
Oh my fucking God. That is exactly what it is. It's like, I'm going to have a startup and it's going to be Dogecoin. It's going to be, can I have cheeseburger coin? Like, I don't know. These guys and their girlfriends seem really into it, and we definitely haven't been drunk for 6 months at sea.
Also, like, wow for their girlfriends being on the ship with them.
I mean,
because women,
I'm just gonna say Stockholm syndrome is real.
No, but like, women didn't often, like, this is still a time where women weren't often on ships with men. Like, well, like, and a lot, I don't, of times, know, they were viewed, they, as a curse.
Yeah, and I don't know if they were on the ship with them, but it was the sailor's girlfriends.
Okay.
So it's like, so her husband comes back from sea with these five dudes he met on the ship. Their girlfriends are coming along, and he's like, babe, I've got the best fucking idea. What if we became pirates? So, to be a big mouth Billy Bass on the wall for that conversation.
Right?
Like, oh, what the, God. How do you bring that up?
Yeah, like, how do you just insert that into conversation? Like, so I was thinking, like, you know how we're nice and settled here? I think we should rob people.
Oh my God, babe. I had the best idea. Oh my God.
I mean, really, it was like George or George's girlfriend, but don't worry about that. Don't worry about who had the idea.
So whatever George said must have been compelling, because Rachel joined the ragtag band of misfits, a ship named the Essex, and like, began prowling the New Hampshire coast.
Like, I like that they just stole a ship. Like, you think?
Oh,
they,
yeah. No.
Okay.
This is the equivalent of them all quitting their jobs, investing $5,000 each into this bullshit startup, and just being like, and we're all gonna live in a one bedroom apartment.
Yeah, very much so.
So the crew of the Essex had a clever way of luring in unsuspecting ships. They disguised the Essex as a damaged ship, and after storms, Rachel would stand on the deck calling for help from passing ships.
All right,
When
that
the
is
ships came in
pretty
close to
smart.
offer aid, they would be boarded and robbed.
I mean, I guess at least if you're gonna pirate, be smart about it.
Well, I mean, it was clever, but it was not kind. So this proved to be a profitable and deadly enterprise that led to the crew robbing 12
Deadly?
ships, stealing $6,000 of cash, unknown untold valuables, and killing at least 24
Why?
sailors all within a year.
Like, why do they have to murder people?
That's like two people murdered per ship. It's a ship per month and two murders per month.
Yeah, that's a lot.
That's what is your ROI on that? Show me your business plan. Show me the spreadsheets.
How do, yeah, like if you're
But then,
murdering people, like, so like robbery is one thing, but murdering people like kind of just brings you into a whole other domain of people not like you're gonna be pursued a lot harder generally if you're murdering.
at best, it's a dick move. It's like, okay, come on. Like, fuck you. But then the tall tale of being a damaged ship caught in a storm became a true tragedy when they were caught in a storm and the ship fucking sank.
Oh my
And
God,
like,
that's
this is why, like,
hilarious.
I don't joke about certain things. Like, I won't, like, in an offhanded way be like, oh, I wish this bad thing,
No, you
because I'm
don't do
so afraid
that.
of it coming true. And you think sailors would be a lot more superstitious, but they're like, no, we're gonna pretend to be an injured ship at sea. And then the storm comes in and just wrecks their shit.
And the storm's like, you want to see how funny that really is, bitches?
Yeah, th this is karma, and she's a bitch, and
Oh,
she's
yeah.
coming for you. So
She
the shipwreck
be
took
coming.
George and much of the crew with it. So bye, George. You made choices.
Made choices and you made Rachel make choices.
Choices. But Rachel survived the terrifying tempest, returning to Boston with no husband, no money, no ship, and no crew. And overall, no prospects because she's a single woman in the 1700s with nothing.
Yeah, that sounds shitty.
But if you thought Rachel would have taken surviving a shipwreck while pirating as some kind of sign to rethink her choices, you obviously have not been paying attention. So Rachel went like full fucking Batman, working as a servant by day and continuing her piracy as a solo act by night.
I mean,
She would
that's not
sing.
really what Batman does.
Well, he has the double life.
I
That's what I'm
know.
getting at. He's living the double
You
life.
really, I feel like
He's a
Jekyll and
successful
Hyde. I feel
businessman.
like Jekyll and Hyde would have been a better reference there.
Kelly, should
Disappointed
I
in
have
your
let you read my
reference.
notes?
What?
Should I have let you make notes
I
on
should
my
have.
notes? Should I have let you
Just
revise
go
them
through and make a
beforehand?
highlight. I'm just teasing you. Okay.
I get my
Tell
notes
me
and it's
about this
just
Batman.
red.
Tell me about this
was.
evil Batman.
He's e She's evil Batman. Thank you. This is what compromising looks like. So she's
Yes.
evil Batman. She would sneak on docked vessels and rob the sleeping crew at night.
Did she
And
stop
according
her
to Rachel from
murdering?
quote, what?
Did she stop the murdering?
She didn't murder anymore. Yeah.
Okay.
And according to her, she never actually killed anyone. But I'm like, Rachel, honey, you lured people in to be murdered. You don't get
Yeah,
credit.
you were a willing participant. Like,
You
maybe
were
the
a part of
first
a whole thing.
maybe the first one you could be like, "Okay, I didn't know they were gonna kill the person." Valid. After the second one, that is no longer a valid excuse.
It's really hard to have plausible deniability with 24 dead people in your wake, honey.
Yeah.
Sorry, not sorry. So, according to Rachel from The Life, Last Words, and Dying Confession of Rachel Wall, published in 1789, quote, and I love this because I feel like this is how I would recall an event like this. Sometime in the spring of 1787, not being able to ascertain the exact time, I happened to go on board a ship lying at the Long Wharf in Boston. The captain's name, I cannot recollect, but I think he was a Frenchman, which is code for like she's like, he was French. There was no way to pronounce his name. Who can fucking remember?
Yep, that sounds accurate.
I'm like, Rachel, same.
Yeah.
On my entering the cabin, the door of which not being fastened, victim blaming, and finding the captain and mate asleep in their beds, I hunted about for plunder and discovered under the captain's head a black silk handkerchief containing upwards of 30 pounds in gold crowns and small change, on which I immediately seized the booty and decamped therewith as quick as possible.
Nice.
I love the way this bitch speaks.
Very pirate.
It's very piratey, but also I love, she's like, I remember the exact time, and I don't know, I think the dude was fucking French. Who could remember? Who can even pronounce it? But I seized the booty and decamped.
Right.
So though Rachel had been charged several times with petty theft and larceny, her life of crime escalated, depending on who you ask. So here's like the light asterisks. As the story goes, 17-year-old Margaret Bender was walking along the road wearing a bonnet that Rachel fancied. Rachel robbed the girl, stealing her bonnet, shoes, buckles, and threatening to cut out Margaret's tongue.
Jesus Christ!
Which seems unnecessary.
I mean, I guess Rachel it's an intense version of don't tell anyone.
I mean, yeah, like, I read some things where it's like she tried to cut out Margaret's tongue. She threatened to, like, there are some variations because, yeah, like, no one actually really fucking knows. So Rachel was accused of and arrested for the theft. However, during her trial, Rachel vehemently denied having ever seen Margaret, let alone robbing her, which, like, to be honest, that's the first line of defense. Like, I've never seen that bitch in my life.
Right.
Let alone her bonnet that I'm definitely not wearing right now. She did take her trial as an opportunity to confess to several other acts of piracy, though.
Why?
Because she's fucking insane. I, like, Rachel's a fucking wild card. And also,
don't think she's very smart.
Well, you actually, you even see this today. People will be like, well, I've done this, that, and the other thing, but I didn't do murder this. Someone. Or yeah, I didn't do true. The worst thing you're accusing me of. Like, I'm not a good person, but I didn't do that. And I'm going to prove to you that I'm telling the truth by admitting to a bunch of other shit that I've done.
Which does not make you look also, any less guilty.
I think she was also a little proud.
I think she was, too.
Of her piracy.
Especially the one where it's like, well, he was asleep and I literally stole it from out, like, under his head.
I would also be proud of that. Not gonna lie. I wouldn't do it in the first place, but if I did, I'd be pretty proud.
Exactly.
Some random Frenchman. I just stole some shit out from under his head. Ha ha ha. Heavy sleeper.
Or, you know, so wasted because he's a sailor.
Probs. I mean, you couldn't drink water back then. It was dirty. You had to drink beer. So despite Rachel's claims of innocence, she was found guilty of highway robbery and sentenced to death. So on Thursday, October 8th, 1789, Rachel was hanged on Boston Common, which I have been to, in front of a crowd of thousands of onlookers. She was hanged with a couple of other guys who were both named William for also highway robbery, but this isn't their story. Her last words were, quote, "Into the hands of the Almighty God I commit my soul, relying on his mercy, and die an unworthy member of the Presbyterian Church in the 29th Jesus year Christ. Of my age." So I think, like, regardless of whether she was guilty of that last highway robbery. Yeah.
She's like, I have 29.
Well, that's actually, like, if you look at old headstones, they will say, like, 55 years of age, mm-hmm. or like of 55 years or something like that. So I think that was like a kind of a common way of speaking.
I know. I still don't think that would be part of my last words, though.
True.
Unless but I was going to make myself younger. But she knew we weren't going to have her birthday.
We only know she was born in 1760 because she says she was 29 years of age.
Oh, when so she could have been older. Executed. Maybe she shaved a few years off.
I mean, I would.
I would too. That's what I was saying.
I'd like beforehand, I'd ask the jailer, like, okay, real talk. How young do you think I could get away with and have it still be believable?
Yeah. It's like,
heart to heart, let's have a moment.
Yeah, before you string me up, what age do I look?
But it does also sound like she acknowledged she had gone down the wrong path. She's like, yeah. I commit my soul. I'm an unworthy member of the Presbyterian Church. I'm at your mercy. Like, choices were made and they were not good.
Right. Like, I made the wrong choices.
Choices. So, well, Massachusetts didn't outlaw the death penalty until 1984, which is insane to me.
I mean, they would move on to the electric. So.
Well, so many places do still have it. They would move on to the electric chair by the 1900s, and the last person was executed by hanging in 1898, while the last executions were carried out in 1947. So from 1947 until 1984, the death penalty was on the books, but it was not utilized.
Yeah.
Well, and like people like fucking Mitt Romney have tried to bring it back to Massachusetts, and it's like, you didn't use it for 40 fucking years. Let it go. Like, and I'm very much against the death penalty, not because I don't have like a vengeful soul, but because the idea of anyone being executed wrongly is too much. Yeah. I can't condone it. So that's my personal view. So we don't know where Rachel is buried, as she was likely not offered a marked grave or a good Christian burial, but her legacy as a pirate lives on. And that's Rachel Wall.
Oh, I like that. That's your fun story, Emily.
It's
since when are we such fun. A dark podcast? Like that your fun story is still robbery and death.
To be fair, it was a lot more fun than last week.
I mean, yes, but still, my point is still valid.
It is still valid. I will not be taking your notes. And this is Rachel Wall, the pirate princess who deserves the Disney treatment. The problematic Disney treatment.
There you go. Yes. I do agree. She would fit into that, like them re-editing her narrative very well.
Yeah. I'd watch it. I'm not going to lie. I'll pretty much eat anything Disney feeds me.
Hey guys, we know times have been tough lately for all of us.
And during hard times, it can be difficult if you don't have anyone to talk to, or it can be hard to talk about certain topics.
Being alone with your thoughts can be isolating. This is why we are sponsored by BetterHelp.
BetterHelp offers licensed therapists who are trained to listen to and help you.
Talk to your therapist in a private online environment at your convenience.
BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. So you don't have to see anyone on camera if you don't want to. Thank goodness.
There's a broad range of expertise in BetterHelp's 20,000 plus therapist network that gives you access to the help that may not be available in your area.
You just fill out a questionnaire to help assess your specific needs, and then you get matched with a therapist in under 48 hours. That is Amazon fast. Then you schedule secure video and phone sessions. Plus, you can exchange unlimited messages, and everything you share is completely confidential, just like with an in-person therapist.
You can request a new therapist at any time at no additional charges. If you want to talk to someone about your mental health, you can get a 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/herstory. That's betterhelp, HELP.com/herstory.
So Kelly, yes. Who are you whining about, my darling?
Oh, I went mythological this week.
Yes, yes, yes. That's actually how I found Rachel. I was looking for a mythological lady and I found her. Oh, I'm like, funny. Well, she's real.
Yeah, I wanted something light. So I am whining about I heard it pronounced both ways. It's either etane or etane. It's E with a little like thing above it. It's Irish. So I'm going to go, I think it's
Oh my God, I almost covered a mythological Irish lady.
I think it's etane.
Yeah. But that's all the sources I found were like two paragraphs and they were the same two paragraphs over and over. I'm like, I can't do this.
Yeah, I will say like most of my source is the Rejected Princesses and then his sources. So sources.
All right. Let's do this. Etane.
So the story is called The Wooing of Etane. Like that's the myth she is from. And she is known as she's a figure in Irish mythology known as the hero of Tacmac Etain, which is the wooing of Etain, or the heroine, which is considered one of the oldest and richest stories in the mythological cycle, which I'm like, okay. She's had several different like titles. Like I've seen it as like she's a sun goddess and like she's the goddess of Irish sovereignty and all of this stuff. And I'm like, I don't even understand how she's a goddess because she's not. She's like a regular person, but like kind of not. We'll get into it.
I mean, maybe it's like how I call you a goddess where it's like you're a very real mortal person, but
exactly.
Bitch, you a goddess.
So she is. She basically like there was this like so I'm gonna give the background, not all of it. But basically like one of the main gods that's in the background is named Midir, and basically
Midir.
What?
Midir. I love it. So we have Etain and Midir. Like my dear.
Oh yeah, no, he's not a great.
Sorry, you're like not. Emily, you just keep saying the name.
Confused. He's not a great guy, though. But basically, there's this whole like weird backstory that doesn't even like feature Etain that deals with like one god owes Medir a favor, and basically it ends up being like, hey, I found this really hot chick who's Etain. Like, go find me. Well, basically, he's like, go find me the most beautiful person in Ireland, and I'm going to marry her. And that ends up being Etain. And yeah, so it's like there's a lot of like weird backstory to it. Because like all of these gods come back into Etain's story. There's one god named Ungus, and he basically like does a whole bunch of stuff to like win Etain's hand in marriage, but for Medir. And a lot of it is like terraforming parts of Ireland and like
what all of this, fuck? Like,
because they're gods and that's what gods do.
It's like he's like, I'm gonna do a thing in City Builders and you're gonna be really turned on by it.
But yeah, like he like cleans rivers and like makes things look nicer and just like makes Ireland look better.
I will say a man who cleans and cares about beautification is pretty hot.
And so like in the end he wins Etain's hand in marriage, but for Medir, not for himself. He's like doing all this stuff to get her for Medir. So one of like the key things about Etain is basically that she's really, really pretty. Like that's,
oh, really?
That is Etain's like only thing. Like most texts really like when they describe her only talk about how pretty she is.
Yada 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 yada.
Exactly. So, and I mean, this is like mythology, so they use a lot of like really colorful depictions. So in a different epic She's described, this is so like, this is a depiction of her in another story. This is not in her story. This is in another story, but it goes, at the well, the woman loosened her hair in order to wash it, and her hands appeared through the opening of the neck of her dress, as white as the snow of a single night, her wrists as tender and even and red as foxglove, her clear, lovely cheeks. So, like, they, her very white wrists, very red cheeks, apparently. As black as a beetle's back, her brows, a shower of matched pearls, her teeth, hyacinth blue eyes, paraffin red lips, straight, smooth, soft and white, her shoulders, pure white and tapering, her fingers, long, her arms, as white as seafoam, her sides, slender, long, smooth, yielding, and soft as wool, warm and smooth, sleek and white, her thighs, round and small, firm and white, her knees, short and white and straight, her shin. I'm sorry. They, like, what literally the- describe.
So you're telling me she's black.
Yeah, right? But basically, yeah, they, like, literally go into detail about just, like, how, like, perfect and pretty this girl is. And it says, like,
but they couldn't tell you her last name or where she's from or her favorite color.
No. And there's, like, there is a lot of
her
debate about, like,
be white, y'all.
There is a lot of debate about, like, who, like, what lineage she is from. Because, like, a lot of times it says she's either, like, the daughter of a king or, like, yeah, it's interesting. But, and it, like, it goes on. There's, like, another half a paragraph that I don't need to, like, continue on about, like, how white she is and how, like, nice she looks. But they do talk. They say, a gently womanly dignity in her voice, a steady, stately step, the walk of a queen. She was the fairest and most perfect and most beautiful of all the women in the world. Men thought she was of the side, and they said of her, lovely anyone until attain, beautiful anyone until attain. So basically, she's really, really pretty, and that is her entire personality.
Her entire personality is she's white.
She's white and pretty.
Soup's white. White and pretty.
So, yeah. So she's gorgeous. Ungus wins her hand for Madeir, and so Etain and Madeir get married. Great, everything is great. End of story. Just kidding, because this is this is mythology, which means Madeir was already married when he married Etain.
What a fuck boy.
So obviously, Madeir's wife. His first wife, Famnach, it's probably wrong, but that's what I'm going with.
Famnach,
was understandably incredibly upset by this. And she was a powerful magician, you know, like, she's a goddess in her own right. And she's like, she reminds me of kind of like Hera, you know, she's like, I'm not going to take this shit. Like, you're dishonoring me by marrying another woman. Like,
dishonor
what the fuck is wrong with
cow.
You? But much like a lot of other mythologies that I'm like, why are you not, like, punishing your husband? She doesn't do anything to Madeir and instead turns Etain into a pool of water.
I'm sorry, why would you marry a magician and then piss her off in such an egregious way?
She then, in a series of, like, really weird moves, gets turned subsequently into a worm. And then...
Oh, God!
And then a fly. So, like, there are other places that are like, oh, she got turned into a butterfly or, like, something else. And no. Like, in the Irish language, there are very specific words for fly, butterfly, dragonfly. And it's, like, it's very specifically fly. So it's a fly.
She becomes Jeff Goldblum in The Fly.
So obviously, like, Madeir doesn't know that this fly is Etain, but Etain kind of, like, hangs out with him, and this fly becomes, like, Madeir's constant companion, and he just kind of, like, Madeir just kind of, like, wanders around and is trying to figure out where Etain is. But doesn't seem interested in any other women, which I'm like, that's an interesting thing to point out. Also, I doubt that.
Okay, I thought the magician wife turned into a fly, but
no, she turned Etain into a pool of water, and then a worm, and then a fly.
Okay, but Madeir didn't get turned into a pool of water?
No.
Oh, I thought he got turned into a pool of water.
No, this is why I'm saying, like, in classic mythology fashion, she doesn't do anything to her husband. She does everything to the woman who it's not really her fault.
This is why we need feminism, because these two women should be teaming up to fuck Madeir because he's being a
fuckboy. So
thank John Tucker must die.
So Famnok like is pissed because she's like, okay, I turned you into a fly and you're still like hanging around with my husband. Like, what the fuck? So she creates this wind that blows the fly away and does not allow the fly to land on anything but the rocks of the sea for 7 years. The weird thing is, apparently she was still really hot for an insect. Apparently this text, this tome, this wooing of Etain book goes on for a while.
What the fuck?
About how pretty the humming of her wings were and her tiny insect voice and like all of this stuff. And it's super funny because the guy who writes Rejected Princesses is like, thankfully this predates Rule 34 because I don't even want to know.
I'm like, oh no. Here's the thing though, Rule 34 is
exactly,
so nothing totally predates it. Exactly. Everything is fair game now.
But yeah,
past, present, and future.
So Etain spends about 7 years being like blown all around by the wind, all around Ireland, until Ongus finds her. That's the person that did all the like magical landscaping to win her hand for Madeir in the first place. And he, it was hard to see, like, tell from the different stories I read if he recognized it as being Etain. Or if he was just like, oh, you're a magical fly. I think he recognized it as being Etain and was like, oh, shit, like you had some magic done to you. And so he makes her this like tiny like fly house and gives her like a little cloak to keep her warm.
What the fuck?
Yep.
This is actually kind of precious.
and then also like sets about trying to like undo her curse because he's like, I'm not as powerful, but like I'll do what I can. And he carries like the fly house with him so she can kind of like come and go as she wants. Well, Famnok finds out about this and is like shows up and is like, what the fuck are you doing? And uses magic again to like set like basically a wind to send Etain off again. Ungus, in probably the only move that actually makes sense in most of this story, promptly then decapitates Famnok.
Jesus Christ. Like, okay, I'm just
you're being
be
an
perfectly
asshole.
Honest. Like, okay, the magician wife, Famnok or whatever. If my husband thought a fly was hotter than me,
oh God,
I would
I'd be
also
so
be kind of fucking pissed.
Yeah.
I would take that personally.
Yeah. And I mean, if you can't tell that this story doesn't have some problems by the fact, like, even the original work only ever calls Etain beautiful, and the only other woman in this story, the only one that actually, like, does something, is a villainous backstabber. Obviously, you can tell that, like, it's very classical mythology. Like, not even, like, I don't know a lot of Irish mythology, but, like, I'm like, this gives me strong, like, Greek and Roman mythology vibes.
Yeah, 100%. Like, if anything, Fumdalok or whatever her name is a sympathetic character.
Right? I'm like, I understand
you. Her husband
you.
Is fucking around. Etain, if anything, is an agentless victim in all of this. And everyone's frustration and anger is directed in the wrong place.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Because fuck Madeir. He's a dick.
Right, like
who's in love with a fly,
right? Like Ungus is like decapitating her kind of makes sense, but at the same time I'm like, she's still not the one you should be mad at. Like Madeir started all of this, but Madeir is like Ungus's like adopted father. It's a weird backstory. So that might be why. Maybe he's just like, I'm going to decapitate my, like, my adopted dad-ish father figure's ex-wife. So then when Atain comes back, everything will just be fine. He's just like, I'm done. Anyways, so.
I wish people could see my face because I can't. I'm on the ride. Let's do this.
So Atain, like, wanders Ireland, and this is, like, about 1,000 years, like, she's just sent wandering with this magical wind, even though the sorceress is dead. Apparently, according to the rejected princesses person, like, apparently the timeline of this fairy tale or this myth is very confusing, like, very confusing. And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. But anyways, eventually Fly Atain lands on, like, a wine glass, which I'm like, yeah, get it, girl. But then promptly gets swallowed with the wine.
Oh, fuck.
And so instead of dying, as would make sense, Atain decides to somehow impregnate this woman with herself. I don't know. She gets swallowed, but then ends up in the woman's ovaries, and then, yeah, like, makes this woman pregnant with herself, like, with herself. And so 9 months later, so I'm not even joking. This is what the rejected princesses guy wrote, and I had to keep it in here for you. But he wrote, 9 months later, bam, Atain 2, Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah!
And I was like, Emily will love this.
Fuck yes! He said that?
Yes.
Word for word?
Yes.
Oh my God. Yes, I love it. Also, I think one of the most horrifying stories that was ever told to me was told to me by a nun when I was going to Catholic school.
Yeah.
Long story short, when she was a kid, she knew a little boy in her class who would, like, snort flies up one nostril.
Oh God, why?
And then, like, shoot them out the other nostril. Because kids are fucking stupid and they're fucking disgusting. That's why. Well, one day the fly didn't come out, so he assumed he swallowed it. Instead of getting pregnant, though, a while later, his nose was really hurting, so he went to the doctor.
Oh, like, laid
eggs. The fly had gotten stuck up in his nose, laid eggs, and died. And the maggots were, like, eating in his nose.
That's gross.
I don't know which is worse. Giving birth to Atain from drinking her with some wine.
I mean, this is like
having maggots.
This is
in my
nose. Whole different immaculate conception over here going
this
on.
This shit is fucking ridiculous. Like,
so,
what the? Okay.
Yeah. So this Atain,
I love it.
Atain to, like, it is the original Atain, but different. Like, she doesn't have her memories, so she doesn't remember being married to Medir or anything like that. She's still ridiculously gorgeous, though. So I couldn't find, because I can't read Irish, but I couldn't find if, like, this was one of those, like, Athena scenarios where she was born, like, as an adult, or if it was born, she was born as, like, a new baby. It kind of sounds like she was born as a new baby, you know? And so eventually, I don't know what, again, don't know the timeline,
Electric Boogaloo.
Yeah, exactly. Atain gets married to, like, the king of the region. Like, she goes on and lives a life. But of course, because she's so freaking beautiful, the king, her husband's brother, is like, you're really attractive and I am physically ill because I am so in love with you. So, like, come
Jesus
take
Christ.
Care of me. And Atain is like, sure, why not? It's like, oh my God, Atain, no. Honey, no.
Okay, here's the thing. I can't pass judgment because as someone who also sacrificed herself to take care of a man, same.
Yeah, but he wasn't like, I'm so sick because I'm in love with you. Come take care of me. As you're married to his brother.
Oh, yeah, that's gross. That's
what I'm saying.
I didn't go that far.
Is like there's so many, like, other, like, things. It's so weird.
There's
anyways,
some layers.
Yeah.
There's some nasty onion layers on that shit sandwich.
So yeah, Atain agrees to meet him. It's interesting because, like, some sources say just, like, she was going to go take care of him. Oh, no. Sorry. Yeah. She says she'll take care of him, and then he's like, hey, if we sleep together, like, that's going to cure me. And Etain's like, yeah, okay, sure. Like I said, I don't think she's very smart.
You know, also, so, she's basically a baby.
Well, she's an adult for the second time in her life.
Yeah, but she doesn't have any of her memories. Like, she's...
Yeah, but I think she, like, went through a whole life cycle again. Like, she was born and then grew up and is now married.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it's weird. Etain,
honey. I just want to, like, grab her and shake her.
But basically, they arrange to meet, and she meets with him, and she's like, when they meet, Etain's kind of like, like, you look like him and you sound like him, but I don't think you're him. So she doesn't sleep with him. But she agrees to meet him again, and this happens three times, and eventually the third time, surprise, it was. Did your headphones die?
Yeah, they did, but I have one back, so we're good. So I was like, just keep talking.
Oh, I thought you told me to stop, so I stopped. I'm sorry.
No. I was like, keep going. I'm having a crisis. We're fine.
No. But yeah, so she meets with him three times, and the third time it was like, surprise, it's not actually, like, Etain knew, like, something was wrong. Like it looked like the brother, and, like I said, talked like the brother, but, like, didn't seem like the brother. And then, yeah, the third time, it's like, just kidding, it was Madeir. Like, the brother was still around. Like, he didn't kill the brother. He just, like, put him to sleep and, like, took his place.
Yeah.
And Madeir, like, fills Etain in. Like, who, God knows what like, Madeir's been doing for the last 1,000 years or whatever. Like, why Etain's been, like, living her life. But, like, Madeir comes in and is like, hey, you used to be my wife. Like, blah, 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 blah. You should come home with me. And Etain's like, yeah, I'm married. I'll agree to, like, marry you and come home with you only if my husband agrees. Like, if my husband's fine, like, either, like, with divorcing me or me being married to two people, like, then it's fine. But otherwise, I'm not coming with you.
Valid in the context right. of all of this insanity. Totally. She's like, okay, I get what you're saying. But there needs to be consent, because what you just right. tried to do was a sex crime.
Yeah. So Madeir actually, like, agrees, and he plays her husband in chess, or an Irish, like, equivalent to chess. Some sort of, like, board, like, that style, like, intelligence board game. And they play a lot of fucking games, because Madeir keeps losing. But Madeir is smart. He's a god. And he makes small bets at first. He's like, hey, let's play chess, and if I lose I'll give you, like, 15 horses. So he loses, and he gives the king 15 horses. And as they play, someone tells, like, lets the king know, like, hey, this is, like, a god, like, a very powerful, like, magical person you're playing with. Like, be careful. And so basically, to, like, test him, the husband is like, oh, do, like, build this canal and, like, do all this stuff. So, to, like, show that he's this god. And so then Madeir ends up doing more Irish, like, landscaping, essentially. And, like, yeah, makes a yep. canal and all of this stuff. And eventually...
Madeir's landscaping company.
Well, it wasn't Madeir the first time, so... But yes.
Oh, that's right. Jesus Christ.
I know.
Okay.
But I mean, it was Madeir's, like, pseudo, not Madeir's actual child, but his, like, adopted child. So it
what
could
is
still
that?
Be Madeir's landscaping.
What is that play where it's the guy with the big nose who's speaking for the other guy to
no
woo
idea.
The lady? Damn it. Okay. You keep talking. I'm going to look it up.
But eventually Madeir's like, okay, like, we'll play this game, and, like, winner gets to pick something. Like, they don't set the bet prior to playing the game. And not shockingly, Madeir chooses to win this game. And he's like, I want an embrace and a kiss from your wife. And the king's like, okay.
Really quick, my dogs are barking, but it was Cyrano de Bergerac.
Yeah, I've never heard of that.
Just but, trust me, it's relevant.
But so he wins and he claims the kiss. And as he's like holding Etaine, he turns them both into swans and they fly away together, you know, as one does. This, of course, makes the king, husband king guy, super mad. And he starts like digging up and burning down every fairy mound he can find, since that's where, you know, Medir and godlike folk in Ireland live, to find her. He's like, no, fuck you and all that you're about. You just stole my wife.
His rage is justified, but also you do not fuck with the Fae of Ireland.
Apparently you do.
Not. He does.
Eventually Medir like pops up and is like, hey, it's fine. Like, I'll bring you your wife back. Like, I'll bring her back tomorrow. You know, it's fine, whatever. And so the next day, 50 different Etaines show up at this guy's house. And like, there's this old lady with them who's basically like, oh, this is a test from Medir. If you can pick out the real Etaine, like, you can have your wife back. And Medir will stop doing whatever.
Was the trick that none of them were Etaine?
No.
Like Spirited Away, where it's like, none of the pigs are the parents.
No. We have to spoil Spirited Away for everyone.
The movie came out like 20 years ago.
No, I'm telling.
If you have not seen it, you have failed as a person, or you're a child and should not be listening anyway.
So. No, he has them all like serve him. And apparently Etaine must serve in a very specific way because, you know, that's her only other skill besides being very white and very pretty. Because
he serves a red wine with a fish and he's like, there's my wife.
Yeah.
Because she doesn't know how to pair wine with food.
There you go, yeah. But so he picks one and apparently it's Etaine and they go back home and they have another kid and life's going pretty well, and then Medir shows up again, as this guy seems to do, and the king is like, what the fuck do you want? And Medir goes, oh, just to let you know that that's not Etaine, that's your own daughter that you had a kid with. Okay, bye.
Okay. Yep. No. No.
Yep. And the husband is like, what the fuck are you talking about? Like, how could that possibly be my daughter? And Medir is like,
was also like, what the fuck are you talking about?
And Medir is like, so when I stole Etaine, when I turned her back into swans, apparently she was pregnant and like he like speed grew that child within Etaine. And so your wife that you just had a kid with is actually your daughter. And then
is this fucking Twilight?
And then Medir pieces out, as Medir does, and husband / dad / dude is like, oh my god, this is fucking gross. And he orders.
Yeah.
So here's the thing I found. Like, okay, so he orders his granddaughter, not so the daughter his wife just had, the one that he thought was Etaine. So not even his not even the person that he's with. Thrown out, just the kid they had, tossed into a pit of wild animals. So his servants like take this kid out into the woods, but apparently they decide like not to kill the kid, and they just put her like in a woodsman's kennel, and then the woodsman like just raise them.
Also very Snow White,
and
very like Oedipus.
Yeah, but so Etaine. Four, essentially. Etaine's daughter's daughter gets raised by the woodsman. Etaine's daughter ends up, like, doing pretty well and, like, being a queen. She doesn't stay with her dad, but, like, she still ends up being, like, a really good ruler. Medir gets Etaine.
Good for her.
Technically, Medir gets Etaine, too. Eventually, he does get killed by, like, someone else from his, like, backstory, but that's kind of fine.
Thank God.
Because yeah.
Fuck that guy. I'm so sick of his bullshit.
Oh yeah, Medir. I'm like, Medir's kind of an asshole.
No one was sad. He died and no one was sad. He sucks.
The interesting thing is, like, people, when I was reading about it, is people say that this is like a very, very loose allegory for the history of Ireland in general. And I'm like, what?
To be fair, all ancient history is so fucking full of incest.
No, like,
I
guess what they say is they're like, each god in this story is like supposedly associated with a certain like region of Ireland. So it's supposed to be about like how like there was this one region of Ireland that everyone wanted and all of this stuff happened so people could own this. And then people said that like they gave it to someone else, but really they took it back. And like, that's what it's supposed to represent, is just like this really kind of crazy interchange of clans and land and all of this stuff between the different clans of Ireland, which is, I guess, why they call Etain the goddess of sovereignty.
Because she's kind of the representative of Ireland as a whole.
Yeah.
And her getting passed around and pieced up
is
a representation of Ireland getting pieced up.
Yeah. Or just even, just with the different clans. And the other thing that, like, the person that does reject a princess is like made sure to point out is they're like, the thing about Irish mythology in particular is it's a largely oral history passed down by bards through generations. And this is the end of a very long-running game of telephone, is how he worded it. He's like, so Etain at one point could have been much more assertive, and just that got written out of it, but we don't know. This is what we have.
Okay, like, me trying to tell a story of something that happened today is like, I don't know, and there was like a French guy, I don't remember his fucking name, like, and I did this thing.
She was a fly, and someone drank the fly, and then they got pregnant with her. I don't know.
Yeah, no, there was wine, the fly got in the wine, the fly made the lady pregnant, the lady birthed the fly, but the fly was human.
So that was Etain and the wooing of Etain, and basically the story of Medir being an asshole. I don't know, it's pretty light. It was weird as fuck.
It was okay. It was light in the sense that there were no war crimes.
Yeah.
But
I mean, it really wasn't a lot of death either. Like, two people ended up getting beheaded, but like, arguably, one of them definitely
back to life in the weirdest ways.
Medir definitely deserved it. The other,
yeah, fuck him.
Famark, it's debatable.
Okay. I'm trying to think of a lesson from this.
Don't just
the fairy tries to take your wife.
Don't
just
marry random people. Like, honestly, that's the story of both of ours. Like, don't just marry random people.
Don't meet men.
Not even that, because like your person almost like Stockholm syndrome. You know, like, oh, he saved me, so I'm going to marry him. And my person was like, oh, this third party did a bunch of tasks for me, so I'm going to go marry this other person that told him to do these tasks.
Again, do not meet men.
I mean, the one guy was nice. There was
the one
guy
one
in my...
guy
technically, there was
who
two.
Who was enabling his friend's toxic behavior.
There were two people that were nice in my story because the king didn't know what he was doing.
He was also a victim. You're right. You're right. But still, this is okay.
Vet the people you marry. That is it.
What are you thankful for? Tell me. Give me something good that doesn't involve you.
My husband is a normal human being. That is what I am thankful for. That my life is fairly goddamn ordinary, and I am very happy about that.
I will say, I love how boring my life is in comparison.
Right? Like, sometimes I hear stories of our women and I'm like, damn, I have done nothing with my life. Like, I need to get out and do something. And then sometimes I hear stories and I'm like, yeah, I'm okay that my life is pretty boring.
Oh, 100%. I'm like, I'm so glad that I am white untoasted bread. I am Wonder Bread, the Wonder Bread of people.
Yeah.
And today, I'm not even pre-sliced. Like, I'm not even
those,
that.
Today is one of those days that that is what I am grateful for. I am grateful for being the Wonder Bread of people.
Okay.
Emily's like, all right.
I am thankful.
Sorry,
I'm thankful
for being disappointed, Emily.
Recently. And it didn't involve me giving birth to my own grandchild or anything. It was great. It was delightfully ordinary.
There's still time.
There's Jesus fucking Christ, Kelly.
No,
this is not the encouragement that I'm looking for.
You're not going to give psycho. Birth to your I own love you grandchild. So much. Don't worry.
But no, I got to visit my grandparents' grave for the first time since my grandma's funeral. And that was really, like, it was really nice. It was really emotional.
I mean, I'm glad.
I was
nice,
already
though.
Planning on going. So I passed through where I grew up on the way of the eclipse. And I had already planned. I'm like, I gotta go. Like, if I do one thing, I have to go there. And when I told my mom where I was going, she's like, oh, are you gonna go visit, you know, Frank and G? I was like, yes, mom, I'm already going. And like, she seemed really happy that I went. And it was a great excuse to drink two Manhattans in honor of my grandparents later.
Nice.
Because I need it after a long car ride.
Valid.
But no, I'm really thankful I had that opportunity. And it was good. I got to say a lot of things that needed to be said. Even leading up to it, there were a lot of feelings that were processed. So it was like a really good excuse to tackle some emotional stuff that I normally avoid, like the plague.
Right.
Or
and,
like birthing
and,
my
and
own
And in
grandchild.
A way that's like really... healthy, you know what I mean? Like,
it was
being able to process it was, and like stuff like that. That's the healthy part.
Yeah, no, it was healthy. A lot healthier than most of the things that I do or engage in. So that was good.
You sound so self-destructive.
Well, thank you.
I don't think you're that
for not birthing your own grandchild and listening to another episode of Whining About Herstory. Like us on Facebook at Whining About Herstory. Instagram at WAHPad.
You know, you say all those dark things and then are just like, I'm not going to talk about it. Moving on. Anyways.
That's what the thankfulness portion is for. It's being like, yay, moving on. Don't have to linger.
Our website is whiningaboutherstory.com, where you can find a link to everywhere you can listen and leave us 5 stars, because it gives us warm, fuzzy feelings and helps with those some not so warm, fuzzy feelings. You can also find a link to our sweet ass merch, a link to our Buy Me a Coffee, where you can buy us a bottle of wine for as little as $5, and a link to our Patreon, where you can donate for as little as $1 a month to get some bonus content.
Last month, I had a Herstory happening that is going to make you rethink Lysol forever.
Seriously.
And Kelly has her Herstory happening this month, and y'all are going to fucking love it.
It's a secret. Just
strap in, strap on. It's going to be wild.
It's going to be fun.
Thank you so much for listening to another episode of Whining About Herstory. I'm Emily.
I'm Kelly.
Have an empowered day, y'all, and don't birth your own grandchild.
Bye.
Or marry a pirate.
Or marry Bye. A pirate.
Don't listen to your husband when he tells you to become a pirate. He's stupid. He's trash.
Don't listen to your
Rachel
drunken husband.
Just needed a drunk girl in a bar bathroom to tell her to that she him. Was better than
yeah,
that.
Exactly.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Bye.